You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, perfectly positive pack of professionals, professors, and podcast pals. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 101, and of course, I am your humble host, Karen, and we are your assembly of assorted, assertive associates who are not asses.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
You know, speak for yourself, Karen.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Don't tell me I'm not an ass. Maybe I feel like being an ass.
That's right.
All right, let's start the show with our general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hot Shot.
You should play that.
Here we go. I have some Trivial Pursuit cards, and you guys have your Barnyard Buzzer ready. Here we go. Blue Wedge for geography. In what city was the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air born and raised? Everybody.
West Philadelphia
would suffice.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But the we all wanted to make sure.
Oh, yeah, true. I guess there is no city called West Philadelphia. West Philadelphia. So we are all wrong.
All right, Pink Wedge for pop culture. What 80s cartoon featured crossbred animals, including Bumble Lion, Rhino Key,
uh-huh.
and yeah. Hoppopotamus?
Oh, what was this? It was a bad.
Is it the Woozles? Wuzzles?
Wuzzles.
Wuzzles.
Did I?
Wow.
Is it Rhinoki? Rhinoki. Like monkey and rhino?
Oh, okay.
Hoppopotamus, that's close.
A kangaroo and a hippopotamus, I'm guessing. Hoppopotamus.
Oh, I was thinking a rabbit and a.
Oh, okay. Could be.
Anything.
Do you remember the Get Along Gang?
No.
They were animals and they lived in a caboose.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. One of them was like a possum, right?
One of them was a moose.
Was like, yes, there was a like moose.
Montgomery was moose.
A lion.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember the caboose. Yeah. The animals that live in a train. I get it. It's really weird times.
Well, have you seen Dino Train? Dinosaur Train?
Dinosaurs on a train? Or
dinosaurs
train
that drive trains around.
they drive them.
They're like, what do little boys really like?
Oh, sure.
Dinosaurs and trains.
We'll just put them together. Combine these?
Don't worry about it too hard.
Got it.
It's fine.
Side note, I was watching this on TV. It's obviously a kids' educational show for little kids, mm-hmm. but I was like marathoning it because it was so good. It's called Octonauts. Have you heard of this?
No.
It's amazing. It's, you know, most of the kids' shows today, they're all CG. You know, it's all 3D CG animated. And it's cute little animals with very cute faces. And they're like a gang of, like a crew underwater.
Okay.
And they have like a submarine shaped like a cat. Like everybody's kind of cat-like. And there's like a cat octopus and there's a penguin. They're all really cute.
Wait, there's a cat octopus.
Yeah. It's a cat head with an octopus body.
Sure.
Anyways, every episode is about a weird marine animal.
Oh.
And some kind of crazy story surrounding them. The whole crew gets together and I was like, oh my God, this is a show made for me. Except for the fact that it's made for like 5-year-olds and I'm 32. But I watched like a whole season of it. It's really good.
I've done that before with some kids' shows. They're really good.
Yeah. Okay, anyways. Yellow Wedge. The Dvorak layout, patented in 1936, was created as a more efficient way to do what? Colin?
Ostensibly to do typing.
Yes.
Yes.
To do typing.
to do typing.
To type.
Unlike the standard QWERTY layout, Dvorak puts the most used letters in the keyboard's middle row. I've never seen one.
That's annoying.
Really weird. You can on your computer, most computers, you can switch to a Dvorak layout. You can change it. Obviously, it doesn't change the letters on your actual keys, but you can switch to it if you want.
What is the QWERTY layout based on?
So the old-timey typewriters would get stuck if you type too fast. And so QWERTY is set up so you would not type fast.
Yeah, that was how they did it.
That seems so...
It was not to force you to type more slowly. It was that the other arrangements, the keys would get stuck together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right. Purple Wedge. What comic strip was reprinted in books titled Scientific Progress Goes Boink, Yukon Ho, and Weirdos from Another Planet. Everybody.
Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh, so good.
Or Just the Men.
That's good, because I was like, no.
All right, Green Wedge for Science. What material is the main component of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch? Dana.
Plastic.
Correct.
Nurdles of plastic.
Mermaid tears.
Yes. Refer to a previous show.
Nice callback, yeah.
Oh, I have to switch a card for this one because it's a picture. It's actually, I'll tell you guys what it is.
Who's the picture of?
The picture is a guy, and the question is, what type of mustache does this man sport?
Oh, is it handlebar?
It's handlebar.
It's always handlebar.
Yeah.
Like, what other type of mustache?
Like Hitler mustache. Right. A little too touchy.
The Fu Manchu, maybe, would be,
politically incorrect.
Yeah. Right.
All right, okay. Real, actual orange wedge question, last question. What does a chef do with a mandolin?
Oh, darn it, I didn't.
Chris?
He slices things.
Yes, slice.
He does slicing.
He does slices.
I'm going to start sharing some of our Lobetrotter facts. Lobetrotters are our fan club members who purchased a fan club pack last year, and they get to send in a postcard with some cool facts. So this one is from Nat Lee, and he said this. One of my favorite bits of trivia comes from the world of film and animation. When it came time to find a voice for Garfield, the comic strip Fat Cat, they went with an actor named Lorenzo Music. Mm-hmm. A few years later, he was chosen to portray Peter Venkman in the Ghostbusters cartoon.
That is his voice, yes. Yeah.
However, Bill Murray reportedly did not like that his character sounded like Garfield. So Lorenzo Music was replaced.
What?
So Lorenzo Music continued to voice Garfield and other characters until his untimely death in 2001. So when a Garfield movie was made in 2004, whom did they get to voice Garfield?
Bill Murray. That was a really well-written postcard.
It is. Yeah. Thank you. That's a good bit. All right. So I hope everybody enjoyed our 100th episode and all the lovely and awesome messages we included from some of our listeners. Thanks to all of you guys who submitted something.
Thanks to Gabriel.
Mini Chris.
Who's a mini Chris. And just in case you weren't sure what that means, he followed it up with an intense nerd. I've played that for a lot of my friends.
Precocious. Very cute. So for today's episode, number 101, our theme is somewhat an homage to trivia and to Good Job Brain. Listeners know that we have a recurring correction segment that we do called...
Actually?
So in today's episode, we're going to be exploring the world of, actually, often misquoted facts, myths, misused vocabulary, and the culture of correction and fact-checking.
Yeah, yeah.
Here we go. You want to make a little mess, you want to make a little crime. If you're gonna do wrong, buddy, do wrong right. If you're gonna do wrong, buddy, do wrong right. If you're gonna do wrong, buddy, do wrong right. You want to make a little mess, you want to make a little crime.
So I'll start us off here with something that was just in the news this past week that I thought tied in quite well to the theme of corrections and actually.
You have to say it in that voice.
Actually.
Actually.
Can you splice in a montage of every time Dana ever said it?
The supercut.
Yeah,
so this past week, on Tuesday, the New York Times published a correction to a 161-year-old story.
Really?
And it may be the oldest correction issued. It is certainly among the oldest corrections issued. And it was a very timely correction. Dana's nodding. I think she saw this in the news.
Yes.
What it was a correction to a story about Solomon Northup, whose memoir was the basis for the movie 12 Years a Slave. That's right. Which just a week ago won the Best Picture Academy Award. The story appeared in the New York Times on January 20th, 1853.
Wow.
An article about him. And it basically recounted, I mean, I suppose these are spoilers here, but it recounted the story of Northup, who was a black man born free in the North, kidnapped and sold into slavery. Now, the article misspelled his last name. In the body text, they called him Solomon Northrup. which is an understandable error, I suppose. And in a second error in the same article, the headline spelled it as Northrup with a U. So they spelled it wrong.
Twice.
R-O-P and R-U-P. Oh, yes, okay. Yes. Okay. His name is Northrup. So the error kind of came to light after someone pointed this out on Twitter the day after the Academy Awards. They had access to the old article. The very next day, they had published their correction. You know, we regret this error from 161 years ago, and they that got me thinking about other kind of notable newspaper corrections.
Yeah.
Like I could not recall hearing of one this old. Do you guys remember just a few months ago there was sort of something similar? This past November, the Harrisburg Patriot News in Pennsylvania. Did you guys see they printed a retraction of their editorial slamming the Gettysburg Address?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And I mean, well, strictly, it's not really a correction.
And that was their editorial from back in the day.
From back in the day. Yeah. This was not a contemporaneous saying, among other things, "We pass over the silly remarks of the president. For the credit of the nation, we are willing that the veil of oblivion shall be dropped over them and that they shall be no more repeated or thought of."
Wow.
Snap. Burn.
Whoops.
Yes. So they, I think, rightly came out and said, yeah, you know what? Our bad. This actually was a pretty classic speech after all.
But I wouldn't say that's a correct, you know, it's not like they didn't get any facts wrong. That is an editorial.
I agree.
Spelling someone's name.
But, well, you know, one thing they do point out is that errors in printed newspapers were actually a lot more common than used to be. I mean, the whole process of composing print, as well as, like, you know, translating text over telegraph and translate Morse code and back and forth, errors were kind of happened. I like the corrections where you can always sort of get a tone of just embarrassment on part of the newspaper, which I think is why it's so satisfying when the New York Times, of all papers, has to run corrections, because it's like, it was so sheepish, we have to admit this. And I have one last example here. In 2012, the New York Times, again, they ran a correction to an article where they were talking about college students with Asperger's syndrome. In the article, there was a passage where they misidentified one of the characters from My Little Pony, you know, the animated show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, again, someone has to sit down and compose this correction when the reader's like, actually, you got the character wrong.
My Little Pony wrong.
So, the correction they had to publish in the New York Times, quote, "It is Twilight Sparkle, the nerdy intellectual, not Fluttershy, the kind animal lover."
Tomato, tomato. Maybe.
Oh, we heard you. We got this wrong, and we have
stop
to print
emailing
this.
Us. You My Little Pony fans.
How do you consider yourself a newspaper? You don't know the news.
There is a New York Times story that's still up now, and it was from sort of the early days of the console wars when the Wii had first come out, and Nintendo had a new chief executive in America, and his name is Reggie Fils-Aimé.
Yeah.
Fils-Aimé. Reggie Fils-Aimé. And the New York Times had spelled his name wrong in a story. So, you know, okay, it happens. And they issued a correction. This is an earlier version of this story, misspelled the name of Nintendo's chief executive. It is actually spelled like this. 3 days later, correction two. The correction to this story gave a second incorrect spelling
of the name
of Nintendo's chief executive. It is actually this, not that or the other.
And then finally, on the third try,
they nailed it.
Yep. Triple checked it.
But that's got to be so embarrassing to have to write the correction to your correction.
Oh my God, I can only imagine. Yeah, just as a newspaper person.
So here's another kind of fact-checking. You guys have heard of Snopes.com. We've talked about it on the show.
Oh, yes.
They're one of our resources.
Yes. They're a great resource. They're the Urban Legends reference pages. So they take all the internet rumors and the forwards your mom and your grandma send you all the time. And they trace back.
God.
Sorry, you know, mom.
Yeah.
Never mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to apologize to my mom. And I was like, no. She knows what she does. So they take all the rumors and all the health warnings, all the random
urban legends,
terrible things that can happen to you if you're not very careful. And they fact check it and then they do a back history on it. When did this start? What was the date, the earliest date that somebody first said this, and when did the story change and become this other thing? It's really cool. Snopes.com. So I gathered a few examples from Snopes.com. You know, I would call some of them urban legends, but some of them are true. I'm going to read these statements to you, and you tell me whether or not Snopes Books.com said they were true or false.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's do thumbs up, thumbs down, because it's just true or false. So.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Ready? McDonald's is the world's largest purchaser of cow eyeballs.
I can go either way. You know, I can think of an explanation for both
sides. That's the beauty of Snopes.
Right.
Like, you're like, I don't know.
You could buy the cow and
the eyeballs come with it.
I'll go false. I don't think they need them.
Yeah, it's false.
Okay. Oh.
It's false. All right. There was a rumor going around that McDonald's was using eyeballs as like
as
kind of the adhesive agent. But they don't, because they're all beef patties and beef is defined. And also, eyes in comparison to the rest of the cow.
I know, the amount of eyes that...
Yeah, so if you really sit down and think about it, it's like, no, that's not... Mm-hmm. It's not true.
Good.
No,
I was tricked.
Yeah.
Yeah, if cow eyeballs were really... be able to use, you could use them for something. I mean, they'd be more rare, you know, because there's only two of them per cow.
Or you would have cows that are genetically modified to have multiple
eyeballs.
Octo-cow.
Simpsons style, right?
Yeah. Spider cows.
Right.
Spider cows.
Yep. Spider cows.
Right.
Yep.
Well, I mean, someone is the world's largest purchaser of cow eyeballs.
That's right.
Though.
They couldn't, they didn't know who. They tried.
All right.
I was intrigued. I was like, where does it say who does take them? Nowhere.
It's a mystery.
All right, second question. Outdoor temperatures can be determined by counting chirps of crickets.
Ooh.
Sounds like a old wives' tale. Wait, by counting?
Yes, chirps of crickets. All right, Colin and Chris say yes. Karen says no. It's true.
Yeah.
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Old Farmer's Almanac says that the formula for getting the temperature is you take the number of chirps you hear in 14 seconds, and then you add 40 to it. And that equals the temperature in Fahrenheit. And a scientist did experiment, and it was very close to accurate.
Crazy. Someone needs to explain the science.
Well, it's just,
it's,
you know.
Magic,
yeah,
Karen.
It's magic.
Science is magic.
Yeah. They're just more or less active the warmer or colder it is.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
Eating turkey makes people especially sleepy. Everyone says false. Everyone is right.
There's tryptophan in a lot of things.
Yeah, there's tryptophan in turkey, but in order for it to make you very sleepy, you have to like have an empty stomach. Turkey is the only protein you eat. You have to eat a lot of it.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, you know, maybe it comes from Thanksgiving where people get tired, but they're eating so much. And
God, the tryptophan's really hitting me. It's like, Bob, you had one slice of turkey laid on top of a giant pile of mashed potatoes, macaroni
so
and
much
cheese,
stuffing.
Five Pillsbury Crescent rolls,
three cups of gravy.
Yeah, and like five cups of wine. Like, go to sleep. You're drunk. All right, here's one that I found very intriguing. Eel skin wallets demagnetize credit cards due to leftover charges from electric eels used to make them.
Whoa!
I have heard this.
Do they really? Not all eels are electric eels. Electric eels, I don't think, are that common. But if you were to make a wallet, so I'm just talking it out.
Could it still retain that charge?
Yeah. I mean, because
we talked about static electricity. I think that like by the time it's done, like rubbing up against other stuff, like a lot of the charges would
is already
balanced
out.
I've heard this too, but I can't imagine a mechanism by which it would work.
I would say it is true because I want it to be wacky.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's fair. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so people want it to be true because it's wacky. It's not true.
Oh.
That's the best urban legends. You want it to be the case.
So maybe this legend came from the magnetic clasp that people would put on an eel skin wallet. And that's
like a dollar, like a money clip.
So Snopes also says that most of the things that say that they're eel skin are actually hagfish, not eel skin.
Oh. Hagfish.
I can't imagine why hagfish wallets aren't selling. Well,
its only teeth are on its tongues.
Tongues.
Ew, they look gross.
Oh, you looked one up.
They're eel shaped. They're not eels. Eel shaped slime producing marine animal.
Ooh.
Here you go. Hagfish rasp and bore into dead and dying fish to eat them from the inside out. emerging to swim away from the remaining bags of skin and bone.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
When disturbed, they exude chemicals and turn the water around them into slime, making the fish almost impossible to grab.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Not a pleasant animal.
Don't Google this. Please don't Google
don't
this.
Don't Google it.
Oh, my God. Closing this window.
Fun.
Yeah. All right.
isn't nature awesome? Last one. Mortality rates in teaching hospitals go up in July due to an influx of inexperienced doctors.
Oh, mortality rates
thumbs
go
down.
Up. I'm going to say thumbs down because I hope this is false.
I want to say thumbs up, but that's not the only thing due to inexperience.
Okay.
I mean, it could be other things because it's summertime heat stroke. Yeah.
Sure.
I'd say true.
It's true.
Yeah.
It is true. Really?
They call it the July effect.
Wow.
In teaching
controlling
hospitals.
For other factors, it's because inexperienced doctors are coming into the hospitals.
If the doctors are not supervised very well, then the mortality rates are going up in July.
Wow.
And it's not like surgeons are being all lazy and sloppy. It's more usually misprescribing medicine. Like they don't know all of the right
dosage.
Also,
you probably have more people coming in, too, because it's the summertime.
It could be that.
Jeez.
Wow. Yeah.
I remember going to Snopes to look up all like the weird Disney secrets like in movies and stuff. Like in The Lion King, they spell sex in one of the scenes.
Oh, right.
And they were like, they would screen grab.
I love it. I trust them probably more than any other debunking source on the internet.
I am into cooking. There's a lot of cooking myths out there. And I'm not talking about like, oh, this is good for you, this is bad for you, whatever. That one of those things where it's like, you know, because everybody always
is it like
salt was bad for you, and now they say it's good for you, and now they say it's not any of that kind of stuff.
Like eat a watermelon seed and you'll grow a watermelon in your stomach.
Yeah, not stuff like that.
Okay.
But the actual technique of cooking.
Okay.
There's a lot of old wives' tales and myths out there and things that people do that are just, as it turns out, just not true.
For nothing.
At all. Okay. So here is just a list of food myths that we are going to dispel.
Okay.
Here and now.
All right.
So if you see someone doing one of these things.
Including one that I had been operating under this misassumption, basically, all this time.
Now you can go in the kitchen when your mom is cooking and be like, oh, I'm actually.
Yeah. She's like, what are you doing
She's
here?
Like, get out.
You don't
here.
Even live here anymore. Yeah. Get out of here.
So, salting pasta water.
I do that.
I do that.
Okay.
It makes it taste better.
It does make it taste better. And the important thing is that is the only reason to do it. Because there's all this stuff about, oh, you got to salt it because it will make the water
boil faster.
Right. Ah. And then it's like, oh, you don't want to salt it because it'll make the water boil slower. As it turns out, one source said 1 ounce of salt per quart of water will raise the boiling point by 1 degree Fahrenheit.
Oh.
So basically, it doesn't make a difference at all.
Right.
What you want to do is, when the water is boiling, toss in a whole bunch of salt before you put the pasta in. What they say is you want the water super salty, like ocean.
Really?
Not like a pinch. Put a pinch.
I just do like a couple shakes, yeah.
Yeah. No, you want the water to be like, you taste it and it's like you're going swimming in the ocean and accidentally got a mouthful of water. Not a lot of that salt is going to go into your pasta.
I've been doing it all wrong. I've been doing it wrong.
It's supposed to be tons of salt, basically, but it has nothing to do with anything other than taste. Cooking the alcohol out.
Oh.
Which is somebody's making spaghetti sauce, and they take a bottle of wine, and they pour the whole bottle of wine into their spaghetti sauce, and then it's like, you're going to feed this to your kids? Oh, don't worry. All the alcohol cooks out.
Yeah, I've always heard that.
Yeah.
But don't they, you know, when they flambe or flame out stuff, that means you're cooking the alcohol off, right?
You're cooking out some of the alcohol.
Not all.
So if you do the flambe technique where you like actually light the alcohol on fire, yeah, you're getting rid of a good portion of it, but not all of it. If you pour it all into a sauce and simmer it, if you simmer it for like, 20 minutes, no, most of the alcohol is still in the sauce.
You could set it on fire.
If you want to set your tomato sauce or whatever it is, your coq au vin or whatever. Yeah. If you simmer the sauce for like 3 hours, maybe, then you'll get like 95% of the alcohol out. But you can't just take alcohol and like pour it into your food and just wait a few minutes and, oh, it's gone.
It's just warm.
It's not gone. It's just hot alcohol.
Mulled wine, it's still wine.
Right.
Like, I guess you're right. Yeah. Mulled wine doesn't just become hot grape juice.
Same thing applies.
I love hot grape juice.
Sushi does not mean raw fish.
Oh, right.
It has nothing
right.
to do with that at all. Do you want to guess?
It's the rice, right? It's the rice that makes it sushi?
Yeah, it's actually the word sushi is in reference to fermentation or sour tasting. Because the original way that the dish was prepared was like fermented fish and fermented rice altogether. But now the rice is mixed. You mix sushi rice with vinegar.
Okay.
When you have a piece of sushi, that rice has been mixed with like vinegar and, you know, that sort of stuff.
It's like a nod to the tangy fermented.
Exactly.
Oh.
Yep.
All right.
Mm-hmm. We had once at trivia, sashimi means pierced body.
Yeah. That's
and
raw
that
fish.
And that does mean that is just slices of raw fish. Yep. Mm. Pork. Do you have to cook pork all the way through? Do you have to cook pork until it's well done?
Oh, I've always heard, you can't. I've heard you can't eat pork
like
rare.
American paranoia. paranoia.
Well, it wasn't paranoia because the trichinosis parasites, those things would mess you up pretty bad. The thing is, though, they're basically eradicated now from the pork supply. They're gone. The low single digits of people get trichinosis every year in the United States, and the vast majority of that is from wild game.
Mm. Oh.
Like, they shoot a deer, and then they eat the deer
not farm-raised,
safe pork. USDA now says they lowered the recommended minimum temperature for pork from 160 down to 145, and a lot of chefs even cook it lower than that. So you can have medium pork.
Interesting.
You can have medium pork that is pink on the inside.
Interesting.
It is okay.
I don't think I've ever had that.
Me neither. Does it taste better?
It tastes a lot better.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Does a medium rare steak taste better than shoe leather?
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Same thing with pork.
But I love shoe leather.
We're not here to shame you. We're not here to shame you, Karen.
Last one, and this is the one that I did not know. Washing mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
You can wash your mushrooms.
Yeah.
Well, no, they say, well, what they say is, yeah, you take
right?
a damp paper towel and you wipe the dirt off of them because they're so porous, goes the saying,
that
they'll take on all the water. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Alton Brown did this test.
Alton Brown did the you can wash your mushrooms test.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you can't wash mushrooms because it's going to absorb the water and they weigh it.
I don't think I ever heard that.
Does not absorb a lot of water.
Although I don't eat a lot of mushrooms. That might be why I didn't.
Also, he did a test on the same episode about, searing meat. Does searing your meat, quote unquote, lock in the juices?
Incorrect.
It does not.
Oh, really?
Now, it's going to taste probably better if you sear it.
Because they're caramelizing the sugar.
Yeah, it's going to taste delicious, and like that's how I make steaks anyway. I'm not doing it to like, you know, you want to preserve the juices, but not at all costs. He seared the meat. And then he just took a steak and didn't sear it and put them both in the oven, waited until they were both the same internal temperature, and the non-seared one had retained more moisture.
Ah.
Because when you're searing it, you're killing cells and you're losing moisture.
Yeah. You guys heard of reverse
moisture,
sear steaks?
Yeah. Reverse sear? What does that mean?
So usually when you cook a steak, you're supposed to sear both sides and then you finish it off in the oven, and then you let it rest.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the new trendy I saw on the internet is reverse sear, where you low temperature, you put it in the oven first, and then you sear it to finish it.
Interesting.
Oh.
Huh.
But you have to be really careful of monitoring the temperature.
Oh, yeah.
The meat. Very cool.
That sounds interesting.
Cool.
Try that.
For science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Steaks for science.
For science.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good, fun stuff at the intersection of food and science.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. All right, guys, let's take a little ad break. So here I have a quiz inspired by Lynda.com. And Lynda.com, their most popular category within all of their online videos and tutorials is photography.
Okay.
So here I made a general photography quiz to see if you guys see how sharp you guys are. All right, everybody, have your buzzers ready.
Mm-hmm.
Start off with an etymology one. The word photography comes from photo and graph or graphy,
yes,
which in Greek literally means what? So here I have a quiz inspired by Lynda.com. And Lynda.com, their most popular category within all of their online videos and tutorials is photography.
Okay.
So here I made a general photography quiz to see if you guys know, see how sharp you guys are. All right, everybody, have your buzzers ready. Start off with an etymology one. The word photography comes from photo and graph or graphy, which in Greek literally means what? Chris.
Drawing light?
Yes. Okay. Drawing with light.
Okay.
Nice.
Photo, light, graph, drawing. What does it mean to burn or to dodge in photography? Colin, it's your
turn. Burning and dodging, at least in traditional photography, is when you're developing in the darkroom, you can basically lighten or darken areas of the image.
Oh, also works in Photoshop, too.
Yes, yes.
So to burn is to make an area darker. And to dodge is to make an area lighter.
Oh, okay.
And it stems from traditional photography. When you're in the dark room, if I expose more light to it, it's going to be darker. If I block light, it's going to be lighter.
Right.
And why this is important, especially when we're talking about digital photography, is that with digital photography, big photo competitions, they're all accepting digital files or digital pictures. Yeah. And their rule is you can only burn or dodge in your digital photography. You cannot do any other Photoshop magic or whatnot. Back in 2010, someone got in trouble, Harry Fish, who won. His name is Harry Fish.
Let's just get that out of the way. Yes.
Slime Fish.
Harry Fish.
He got an email and it was, congratulations, you won for this category for the National Geographic photo competition.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a couple hours, it says, actually, we have to disqualify you. But what he did was he took out a unsightly plastic bag out of the picture.
Yeah.
And for a lot of these photo competitions, you have to submit the original raw file, burning and dodging.
Didn't that happen to one of the AP photojournalists recently?
Yes, yeah. Who heavily photoshopped an image.
But
this dude just removed a bag, you know? So this is why burning and dodging is very important.
Like, yeah.
It's the rules for a lot of these big competitions.
I like how you say, Karen, it is still in Photoshop, and I like that the little icon for the dodge is the little dodge tool.
Oh,
and I'm sure there are just generations of people using Photoshop who've never touched an actual dodge tool. Yeah,
right.
See, there's probably a lot of people who've never seen a floppy disk either.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's a good point.
Yeah, because dodging in the old days is a piece of paper on a stick.
Right.
And you're just like kind of dodging the light.
Yeah.
And it's still that in Photoshop. Yeah, how many... That's true. Yeah. A lot of that stuff is kind of outdated now. All right. There are 12 Hasselblad cameras left relatively untouched in what location?
Oh.
Colin?
Would this be, I'm going to guess, somewhere in Germany?
No.
Is it in America somewhere?
No.
Somewhere in...
Chris.
Is it on the moon?
Yes!
Ah!
Very good.
Nice.
Neil Armstrong used a Hasselblad data camera, and the Hasselblad camera, they were modded to meet NASA requirements that the astronauts could easily click with their big gloves and their suit. And 12 of these cameras still hang out on the moon.
Nice.
No reason to take them back.
All right, last question. Obviously, before digital photography took off in the 2000s, the photo processing industry was the biggest worldwide user of what non-renewable resource?
Non-renewable resource.
Smiles.
It's got to be.
No, those are renewable, Chris. I'm making a new one right now.
Here I go. Yeah.
Not,
Hint, it's a chemical.
I have a guess. Yeah, I was going to say one of the developing chemicals. It's like one of the silvers in the developing process.
Just silver.
Silver. All right.
Okay.
Biggest worldwide user of silver.
Wow.
In the world. So there you go. Some photography facts. And of course, this quiz is inspired by lynda.com. Definitely check out photography courses because they have a lot of awesome experts talking about it and teaching you new stuff.
Yeah.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
You're listening to Good Job Brain. Smooth puzzles, smart trivia. Good Job Brain.
So, have you guys ever heard that the blood in your body is blue? Like, before it becomes oxygenated?
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah, I have heard that.
I see in my veins, it's blue. That's why they're blue, right?
No, that is not why they're blue. Your blood is not blue.
Right.
I was looking at science myths, and that one, I was like, wait, this can't be right. And I was looking at different sites, and I swear I've learned this in school before, that's why it was blue.
And the reasoning was that when it oxygenates, right?
Pre-oxygen blood.
That was the story.
But that is not why your veins are blue.
Why are they blue?
It has to do with your flesh. The flesh that's covering your veins.
Yeah, it's an optical illusion.
Yeah. The flesh proteins scatter light. They scatter blue more than red. Mm-hmm. And so just the top part of your tissue, if you have kind of white skin or pale skin, it's a little bit blue. It's like a pastel blue. And then over the dark background of your veins, it really makes the blue show up.
Oh, my God.
So
what color is pre-oxygenated blood?
It's red.
Right.
Like, it's red the whole time. It's never blue. I was so confused by that. And you would have thought that there would have been more experiments where they show you, oh, here's the blood turning from blue to red. You would think.
And in all the charts they showed in school, they label the veins, you know, with blue.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Right.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh, my God.
It comes in teaching materials.
It
does.
Mad.
Yeah. That's like a counter actually. It's like, oh, blood is red. Actually, it is blue before oxygen. And you're like, actually, no.
Oh,
wrong.
No.
It's your flesh.
That's the most satisfying of all actually.
The
second level.
Right. And speaking of that guy, that actually person, for my segment for today, I decided to explore different words that you might call a know-it-all.
Uh-huh.
And where did they come from?
Oh, okay.
So the actually thing is a battle for me. You know, I feel like I have to pick my battles, like, emotionally.
Uh-huh.
Like, like, I really want to correct people if something wrong. But then I also don't want to
be that guy.
But sometimes I can't stop it. Like,
It's not fun to be on the other end of an actually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Most of the time I kind of keep it in check in my head. But recently it was on a work email. It was on a work office email.
All right.
And someone said something. Basically, it was involving, tigers in a savannah. It took 5 minutes. I'm sitting there. I was like, should I? Should I not? Should I? And I just did it. Reply all.
You reply all? Karen, you are that guy.
I was like, just, FYI for future reference, everybody, like, tigers don't exist in Africa.
For future reference.
Tigers are Asian, actually.
They don't live in savannas.
Tigers are African.
I think I know you so
reply
much
all definitely took that to the next level.
Yeah.
So you know what? They're not going to make that mistake again.
That's right.
You took them to school.
So here I've compiled a list of names that a lot of people who are on this email list probably thought of me. Here we go. And the etymology and a possible root, obviously. For words, a lot of these words, you just can't really pinpoint.
Sure.
Right when people started using them, there are a lot of theories. So here we go. Poindexter.
Oh, Poindexter.
Okay.
It sounds like an old name to me. I mean,
I don't know.
I don't know.
So it was popularized in the 1950s because it was the name of a character from Felix the Cat.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
kind
sure.
Kind of a nerdy guy.
Professor Poindexter.
Yep. That was when this name became popular.
Oh, really?
Some theories say that, Dexter has been associated with, you know, brainy types because of like dexterous, you know, having a dexterous mind. But we can definitely say that the popularity rose because of Felix the Cat.
Huh. I think I assumed that he was named that after because it was already a nerdy name. Huh.
All right. Dweeb.
Dweeb.
Dweeb is a portmanteau, possible theory, portmanteau of dwarf and feeb or feeble.
Oh, okay.
So dweeb. Huh. Dork.
Dork. Oh, man.
Isn't that a whale's penis?
That is.
What?
A lot of people thought dork is, that's the name of a whale penis.
Uh-huh.
It is not. Dork probably came from the word penis and other variants of the word penis, but not specifically whale.
Okay.
Not necessarily whale penis.
I don't know
where the whale thing came from, but there was a lot of like, this is not true.
I have not heard that one. That's interesting. Okay.
And of course, here we are, the word nerd. Lots of explanations for nerd, but it was first documented, printed in a Dr. Seuss book.
Really?
Uh-huh. We don't know what it meant because it was a name for something.
Oh.
The quote is, a nurkle, a nerd, and a seersucker, too. That's the line.
Oh.
It never said what a nerd was.
Okay.
It was a capitalized N.
Like many things that Dr. Seuss
made up.
He was so close to nerdle, which is a word we said during this episode.
Mm-hmm.
1950, this nerdle. Book came out, and that's where the word nerd first appeared.
First time.
Nerd definitely feels older slang to me than dork or dweeb or...
Yeah. Alternate spelling, N-U-R-D, had its first recorded use appear on a student publication at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, RPI. That N-U-R-D word came from K-N-U-R-D, nerd, which is drunk spelled backwards.
Oh.
And the word is meant to be the opposite of someone who get drunk. So someone who didn't party, who didn't go out.
They're not a drunk. They're not a drunk. Nerd.
They're a nerd.
Oh, I like that. Mm-hmm.
I wish it was spelled that way. That's good.
A lot of other theories about nerd too, but those are the interesting ones. I thought it was funny.
That is nice. Cool.
That's great. Karen, reply all to everyone. Dear dummy.
I like it. The reply always like the equivalent of like, hey everybody, gather around.
Gather around.
Only one of you got this wrong. Well, as we were just discussing, it is not fun to be on the other end, the business end of an actually pointed squarely at you.
No, it's fine. I'm sure you did it charmingly, with charisma.
And I don't know about you guys, but for me, the worst, the most humiliating is the grammar, actually. The word usage, Chris, I'm sure, as a writer, it's whether you're wrong or right, it's just a pain to have to deal with these. So with that in mind, I'm trying to empower you guys to be the annoyer and not the annoyee. So I have a quiz all about word usage errors, common actuallys that you can prepare for grammar usage around you. So I'm going to give you several sentence examples here. There's no tricks. All of these are considered by strict grammarians to be wrong uses of the words in the sentence.
Okay.
So I'll read you the sentence and you tell me why is it wrong or what makes it wrong. Okay, we'll start off with one that is much debated. The fumes from the cleaning supplies made me nauseous.
Oh.
Chris.
Something is nauseous if it's the sort of thing that causes one to become nauseated.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
A nauseous person, a gaseous person.
Right, right.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Yeah.
It makes you nauseated.
It nauseates you when you become nauseated. Nauseous is like an adjective to describe something that nauseates you.
So I feel nauseous is wrong.
Yep.
Strictly speaking,
yes.
Now, I feel nauseated.
This,
oh my God, I say I'm nauseous all the time.
Yeah.
This was directed at you.
Do you really? Are you really? If you're nauseous all the time, shouldn't you get that checked out?
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, as grammarian Theodore Bernstein pointed out, people who are nauseated are no more nauseous than people who are poisoned are poisonous.
Ah, yes. Yep.
All right, here we go. Next example. What is wrong with this sentence? Jack had only 15 minutes before his flight, so he quickly perused a few magazines. Writer Chris again.
To peruse is to is actually to read something like intensely poring over every single word.
What?
It does not mean to skim or to browse.
Chris has it. Peruse is to read, peruse is to read carefully and to read and really examine.
I know.
I would say the meaning might have changed.
Well,
because I think, right? You know, the way cleave and cleave.
I mean, as a blanket statement for all of these, yes, it's true that language changes when we all agree on it. I'm not against words expanding their meaning, but when the meaning is directly opposite from the original meaning, it kind of ruffles my feathers. Yeah. Yes. Here we go. What is wrong with this sentence? Mm-hmm. I wanted to paint my entire house in one afternoon, but the enormity of the job was too much for me.
Is it just redundant?
Enormity.
It's probably, enormity is not the right word.
Enormity, despite being used this way, does not just mean enormousness. You'll see this a lot. Or even just anything overwhelming.
Uh-huh.
Enormity has a very specific meaning of something that is monstrously bad or evil or just outright wicked.
Nothing to do with size.
Nothing to do with just, it doesn't mean it's a big challenge, you know? And if you talk about the enormity of someone's crimes, it doesn't just mean like they did a lot of things. I mean, genocide. Or war crimes, right? This is enormity means really, really bad.
Huh.
He was painting a haunted house.
A murder house.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was painting with blood.
I stand corrected. Yes, I was painting with blood.
Crazy.
Next one. Due to the gas leak in the basement, firefighters evacuated 50 people.
Hmm.
Chris.
Is evacuate, does it only apply to the person who is evacuating?
Again, yes.
You can't evacuate people. You can evacuate yourself.
Strictly speaking, you evacuate buildings.
You evacuate.
People can be evacuated from a building.
Oh, because it's it's like from vacuum, right?
right. It's voiding of the contents of. Yes. Yes.
You can't evacuate. If you evacuate a person,
if you tell
them coming out,
you're sucking all of their inner organs out of them.
If you tell a physician that you evacuated a person, they are going to think you meant something very different,
right,
yes.
Right.
Through a hole.
Next sentence. On my way to work, I saw a motorcycle collide with a parked car. Karen.
Collision occurs between two moving objects.
That is correct.
Yes!
Yes.
Physics comes in. My English is not so great.
Collision requires multiple moving things to come into contact, right? You can't collide with a tree. Yeah, you can crash into a tree. You can't collide with a tree.
Nice.
Unless it's a really funky tree.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
If the tree is on a truck and it's moving,
you're right.
It can have a collision with the tree.
Well, once again, Dana with the inside the context of the
edge
quiz.
Cases.
Last one. What is wrong with this sentence? I haven't eaten since lunch yesterday. I'm really feeling some bad hunger pains.
The right word is hunger pangs.
It is pangs. Yes.
Acorn.
Pangs. And pains makes sense because the pangs, the stomach contractions are hunger pangs.
What is a pang?
A pang is just like
it's a pain.
It's like a sharp sensation. Yeah. Just like a kind of a sharp.
So they're almost the same thing.
They are almost the same thing.
That's what makes an acorn.
That's
it makes sense. Hunger pains makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
The other usage you'll hear of pang is like guilt.
Yeah.
You know, you're like pangs of guilt.
Oh, yeah.
This sharp, I feel so bad that I did that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, now you guys have more ammunition to
Be super obnoxious with
your work. Reply all.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
All right, and we have one last quiz segment from Chris, and I just want to preface it with the fact that it is also an homage to Good Job Brain. When we first started out, the surprising number of people would write in, I thought your show is called Good Job Brian. And a lot of people are like, my name is Brian, and that's why I downloaded your show, because I saw the logo and it says Good Job Brian. This happened so much that we actually own www.goodjobbrian.com as well. It just redirects to Good Job Brain.
Right, for now. I don't know.
Maybe we'll do something else.
Yeah, yeah.
was just a phenomenon. I couldn't believe so many people were like, good job, Brian. Good job, Brian. Mm-hmm. And so Chris.
And so, I mean, basically, so yeah, the alternate universe version of this show is clearly called Good Job, Brian, in some other plane of existence. It's taken us about 101 episodes to get to this.
Yeah,
but finally, we're doing Good Job, Brian. So I am going to name you a list of accomplishments, things that were achieved by various Brians.
Love it.
Throughout history and possibly in fiction. And after you hear about their accomplishments, simply tell me which Brian I am speaking.
Wait, or you can make us answer, good job, Brian blank.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Job. Oh, yeah. I like it.
Okay, so here we go. I'll name the accomplishment, you buzz in and say, good job, Brian, and then that person's
all
right. name.
All okay. right,
great. Okay. This film director has never been nominated for an Academy Award, even though he's directed such films as Carrie, Scarface, and The Untouchables. Colin.
Good job, Brian De Palma.
That's right.
Oh, De Palma.
Also, for some reason, never ever nominated for an Oscar, this well-known character actor has won 2 Tony Awards for Best Lead Actor in a Play for Death of a Salesman and for Long Day's Journey into Night. Colin.
Good job, Brian Dennehy.
Good job, Brian Dennehy.
Really?
Also played Tommy Boy's dad.
Yes!
As Aaron knows.
Nice.
He's done a lot. He's done a lot.
Callahan.
What'd she say?
In the 1980s, he won 3 Young Artist Awards for his portrayal of Andy Keaton, the youngest child on Family
Ties. Oh, wow.
Colin again.
I'm embarrassed. I know this.
Yeah.
Good job, Brian Bonsall.
Great job, Brian Bonsall. Yes.
Wow, good job,
also played, Worf's half-Klingon son in Star Trek The Next Generation.
What? Really?
Yeah.
What season was that?
I have no idea. That's a huge nerd.
All right. What?
A
nerd.
I was about to say, I haven't gotten there yet.
He is the fictional author of fictional books such as Faster Than the Speed of Love and Wish It, Want It, Do It.
Oh.
Karen.
Good job, Brian Griffin.
Good job, Brian Griffin.
Yeah, from Family Guy.
From Family Guy. Faster Than the Speed of Love didn't do so well, but Wish It, Want It, Do It.
I love that title.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's great American novel.
In 2010, this former teen heartthrob actor married Megan Fox.
Oh.
Karen.
Nice.
Good job, Brian Austin Green.
Yes, yes. Indeed.
90210.
Brian Austin Green.
David Silver.
Yeah.
In 2005, this rock guitarist was named a commander of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire.
Oh.
Commander.
Yeah.
It's unfortunately in the Order
like
of the British
sir?
Empire. You know what? It's one rank below where you get to be called a sir, unfortunately. Yeah. Dana.
Good job, Brian Adams.
No, Brian Adams.
There's a Brian Adams.
There is a Brian Adams, Canadian. Colin.
Good job, Brian Ferry.
Not Brian Ferry. He was the guitarist. He was a lead guitarist for Queen.
What is his last name?
Don't know.
It is good job, Brian May.
Brian May.
All right. Okay. All right. Shake it off. All right. He was the National League's saves champion in 2010.
The National League.
That is the baseball.
That is
Colin.
Good job, Brian Wilson.
Good job, Brian Wilson. Yes.
From the Giants.
Yes.
With Beardy. The Giants.
Beardy, yeah.
Inducting him into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in the year 2000, Paul McCartney called this Brian one of the great American geniuses. Karen.
Good job, Brian Wilson.
Good job,
as
Brian
well.
Wilson. Also Brian Wilson. Beach nice. Boys, Brian Wilson. Here's another Paul McCartney quote. He said of this person, if anyone was the fifth Beatle, it was Brian.
Good job, Brian Epstein.
Good job, Brian Epstein.
Who's that?
Manager of the Beatles.
Oh.
This R&B singer is tied with Snoop Dogg for the record of most Grammy nominations without...
Oh, sorry. Whoops.
Without a win. Dana.
Good job, Brian McKnight.
Good job, Brian McKnight. And finally...
Pretty good job.
Yeah. Okay job, Brian McKnight.
Finally, until episode 202, this Brian had a Food Network show titled, What Would Brian Blank Make? Karen.
Good job, figure skater Brian Boitano.
Yes. Oh. What would Brian Boitano make?
That was really the name of his show?
Yes. Yeah. As inspired, of course, by the South Park song, What Would Brian Boitano Do?
I like that.
Yeah. Yes. So good job, all you Brians out there.
Question, did you not include Brian Cranston because of the Y? He spells his name differently.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That is correct. I did not include it because of the Y. Might have looked up people named B-R-I-N.
Yep. All right, and that is our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learn a lot of stuff about being an annoying know-it-all person.
Just go out there this week, and if you can annoy just one person.
With one of these facts.
Yeah.
With one of these actually facts.
Then we've done our job. Yeah.
Yes. Speaking of doing our jobs, as you guys know, we've been trying to get back to our home time, I guess you would call it, because we are, of course, travelers from the future, here to save trivia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, from its horrible fate. But we lost our
Fartus.
We lost our Fartus. Our
fancy and ridiculous time interloper system.
Yes. To our old nemesis, Carmen San Mateo. Now, you guys have helped us out because we needed to figure out where Carmen had gone.
Yes, you guys did. We have a little Fartus, our backup Fartus on the site, and many of you guys have entered in the right code.
So if you listened to the little excerpt of the speech that we overheard, it was the Gettysburg Address. It was not Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. It was a piece of a different address that was given during the same event. And so, good job, you guys, because you figured out that that took place in the same day, which was November 19, 1863, entering 11191863 into the emergency backup FARTIS that we keep around for emergency purposes. Thanks to you guys, we were able to figure this puzzle out. We traveled there to see if we couldn't catch Carmen San Mateo in the act.
She slipped away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, you would have figured we would have used the time machine to travel then back 20 minutes in time. But
to catch her.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, we don't need any backseat Fartus drivers here. Yeah.
Listen, but something did happen. And here is what happened when we went back to the scene of the crime.
Gettysburg.
Hey, Brainiacs, it's us, Machapella, your favorite non-instrumental, non-infringing musical group. A one and a two and a... Well, you didn't find San Mateo. She already gave you the slip. Don't take it too hard. She took off with your Fartus. Off on another time trip. Guys, Carmen and Haida Clue are already gone, but true to her nature, Haida Clue has hidden a clue to their next destination. She hid it on this scrap of paper that we just found, and here it is. It's an excerpt from a speech from a U.S. president at some point throughout history. Here's the excerpt. Hi, Nine Rice Nibbler. It doesn't make any sense. Hi, Nine Rice Nibbler? H-I-N-I-N-E-R-I-C-E-N-I-B-B-L-E-R? It's gotta be an anagram. It must be an anagram of a famous four-word phrase used in a speech by a United States president at some point throughout history. Look, Machapella, we're great at singing, and we're very good at falling under the fair use exemption to copyright law, but we are definitely no good at anagrams, so you Brainiacs are gonna have to take it from here. But we'll see you at the finish line.
Goodbye!
Okay, new clue. Well, listeners, you heard Machapella. There is an anagram somewhere, and we need to find next date where Carmen and Haida Clue escape to. And again, this week, you can punch in the code into our backup Fartus on our site, goodjobbrain.com, and let's try to find the next piece of the puzzle. And that's our show. You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and also on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And thanks to our sponsor this episode, lynda.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Neil. And I'm Ken.
And we are from the Triviality Podcast, a pub trivia-style game show where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Join us each week for an hour-long game of general knowledge trivia featuring special guests from around the world, plus tons of extra themed episodes.
If you want to improve your trivia game,
or you just want to scream at us in your car when we get easy questions wrong,
then we're the show for you. Find Triviality on all your favorite podcast apps.
But you know that, because you're already listening to a podcast.